just follow our program because Dr. Google will get you so confused. And even, I mean, there's a lot of good information out there and summits and podcasts, but you know, you can really drive yourself nuts if you try to consume all of it and not follow a certain path.
Yeah, I mean, it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts, and I know quite a bit, and I study quite a bit of things, and then it drives me nuts when you study this. This is really going to be the area that I think the focus is going to need to be.
Welcome to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. I am Debbie Robinson, your host and guide on your Stronger Bones Lifestyle journey.
My next guest is Julie Olson. She is a triple certified nutritionist and a functional medicine expert. She was named a top 23 expert to watch in the health and wellness space by the Los Angeles Tribune magazine. She is host of the Healthy Body, Healthy Hair, The Truth About Hair Loss Summit, a $50,000 winner of PubCon's book publishing contest, and creator of the Healthy Hair Fix program, which personalizes hair growth strategies by linking health, lab results, and lifestyle to avoid long-term medications, procedures, and products. Julie's mission is to help women worldwide restore their health, hope, and hair naturally to look and feel their absolute best. Today, I have Julie Olson with me. She is a triple board certified nutritionist, really knows her stuff with nutrition. I asked her to come on today because a hot topic these days is oxalates. And especially in the bone health world, there's a lot of foods that are being demonized, foods that are so important for bone health. And so I wanted to have this conversation today with Julie to get more information from an expert on oxalates, what we need to know, what we do know, what we don't know, and what we really need to know when it comes to oxalates. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again, Debbie. So good to be here.
Yes. All right. So let's jump right in. I had somebody in class the other day say to me, oh my gosh, I'm not able to eat spinach or almonds or flax seeds because they have high oxalates and I have osteoporosis. And I, even in my private sessions, people are saying this. So can you just explain to us what are oxalates and some kind of, you know, if you were talking to a kindergartner. So just kind of break it down for us. What are oxalates? Do we have to worry about them? And what do they do? And what do we need to know?
Okay, so oxalates, or it's often called oxalic acid, is a substance that binds with minerals, including sodium, potassium, calcium, iron, and magnesium. And in the intestines, oxalate binds with calciums to create calcium oxalate, and then it's excreted in the feces. But this binding can reduce how much calcium is absorbed. However, I'm just going to cut to the chase here. You have to get your gut healthy or you could have a problem with this. And there's ways to eat these high oxalate foods, which you should. If you're concerned about it, you could take what's called calcium mag citrate. If you have some high oxalate foods in it, it binds to them and you can urinate them out or poop them out, because a lot of the high oxalate foods are healthy, like beets, berries, even dark chocolate is a healthy food, legumes, nuts, parsley, rhubarb, spinach, some teas. And, you know, you can't just avoid those foods. You want to have a balanced diet. You want to rotate. And again, it goes down to the health of your gut. And also there's some new research out that the industrial seed oils is what's causing these high oxalates. This is like fresh off the press. And so I think that's the problem more than these healthy foods that's causing this high oxalate problem. You shouldn't be eating those seed oils anyway.
Yeah, because they're inflammatory. They're bad for brain health. The interesting thing is that We have to understand the balance, the mechanisms, and the homeostatic desire of our body in the first place. So eating foods, plants have anti-nutrients in them. This is in that category of that. Yet the body has a way to manage some of those aspects. So the calcium that should be eaten in our foods, and in some cases people are supplementing with it. So calcium in our diet needs to actually first be absorbed. It needs to be absorbed because vitamin D is going to help it get absorbed. You need to have a healthy gut. You need to have healthy digestion of bile from your gallbladder. You need to have healthy enzyme activity in your gut and hydrochloric acid so that you're bringing the food that comes into the small intestines into the right form. And then there's that dance and that balance. And the body has a way of binding with these oxalates to then poop them out of your body. So that mechanism in a healthy human would be okay. And I think Dr. Perlmutter, I heard him speaking about this. He said that most humans have the ability to manage the oxalate content in our foods.
Right. And even there was a study found that vitamin C can reverse the impact of oxalates and other anti-nutrients that have
iron. Whether it's supplement or food, right? And that's right, the other thing. Right. So it's back to the balance. We should be eating foods that are high in vitamin C. Right. We should be eating foods that are high, especially if bone health is a concern, in calcium, because we're eating all of the right things that are going to bind together and either be absorbed for your bones and your tissues or pooped out that are bound that way. And I think that to me is what I want to get across here, because we're demonizing bone healthy foods, spinach, dark chocolate, almonds, chia seeds. It's crazy. And now women are not wanting to eat foods that are so supportive of bone health and gut health. Someone said to me the other day, "Oh, I heard that sweet potatoes are high in oxalates," which is such an amazing of food for your gut health. And gut health is so important for all facets of health.
Also having that healthy microbiome, which I know we both test for, is going to reduce any of the high oxalates that you have in your system as well. I mean, you got to get that in balance, like you were just saying, Debbie, before you can metabolize them properly.
Yeah. So I was doing a lot of research for this. I want to kind of go back a little bit. The whole oxalate phytate, I remember last year when there was a summit, I remember one of the doctors saying, "I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole." And that's because the information is sparse. And when I started to look and then I listened this to a summit or a speaker on oxalates, and I listened to her and all the foods that you shouldn't eat, which were all the bone healthy foods that I promote eating and other people in the bone world promote. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted, and at the end of the conversation, she said, "But we need to do more research, but we need to learn more." And so I could tell that she was saying not to eat all these things. And at the end of her talk, but we don't know enough, which is what I find is typically the issue. So I did some research. And what I found is that most of the studies that are done on oxalates are done on men, and they're done on men with kidney disease, because kidney stones will be formed. So the studies that we're looking at are done on men with kidney disease. And so here's something I found out of Washington University, which does quite a bit of studies on nutritional things. Calcium oxalate crystals are formed in urine. Their relative solubility increases much more with an increase in oxalate concentration than within an increased calcium concentration. So increased oxalate is likely caused crystal formation in the urine and eventually kidney stone. So we do know that the kidney stone concentration can come from these oxalates, which is kind of where we start. But here it says, not all studies of patients with kidney stones have been able to find an increase in urine oxalate or oxalate intake, but the urine oxalate will fluctuate from day to day. And some studies were done at the time, not done at the time the stone developed. And that's the other thing. We don't even know when the stones develop. So this fear of these kidney stones, we don't even know how they happen, when they happen, where they happened, and what caused them to happen.
Right. And also most urinary oxalates are not from dietary intake.
They're not from
dietary intake of oxalates. And there's also research pointing to their use as a possible chelator for a binder of toxins to help remove those toxins from our body.
Which makes sense, because if we're talking about the gut, right? The gut, I was reading today that the gut is the number one area for detoxification to take place.
Right.
So the gut is the outside world. It has not crossed the mucosal barrier to become you yet, right? So you would imagine that we have a tremendous amount of protection in our gut, which we do, from whatever we know, all that we know so far with our research. So it would make sense what you're saying, Julie, that in the gut, there are mechanisms to actually bind and excrete things that we need to get rid of. And that's what you're pointing to there. And you know, this conversation that I'm having with you is we only know what we know. And we're both sharing, like, what is that we're looking at? Here's something that increased urine oxalate is seen with. Here's some of the things it's seen with. An increased intake of oxalate-rich foods. And then here's some of the gut stuff. Inflammation of lower intestines. This increases permeability and enhances oxalate absorption. So now we have potential leaky gut, SIBO, dysbiosis showing up, which is why gut health is so integral for management of oxalates. And then the next one is low calcium concentration in the lower intestines. Calcium will bind to oxalate in the GI tract and thus prevent it from being absorbed. That's the good mechanism that we want. And then this other one, fatty acid malabsorption.
Yeah, I've seen that study a lot. Yeah, there's quite a few studies on that. Yep.
Okay, so what have you seen, studies or?
Well, yeah, I mean, fat malabsorption also contributes to increased calcium binding to the free fatty acids, leading to more soluble oxalate in the intestine, and also increases leaky gut, you know, gut permeability, leading to more oxalate absorption. So like we said at the beginning of this conversation, if your gut's not healthy, yeah, you're not going to only have problem with absorbing more oxalates than normal, but you're going to have a lot of other problems too, including, you know, the bone loss. So, I mean,
yeah, that's really interesting. So now what you're making me think. So if someone has leaky gut, we know that certain things slip through and get into the system. We right. know that endotoxins from bacterial overgrowth get through. There's something called lipopolysaccharides, LPS, that we could find higher concentrations in the blood of those with leaky gut. This could also be another thing that we're maybe not realizing, but maybe now this is what we're going to realize, is that now we have oxalates slipping through into the system. So it's not that you shouldn't eat spinach. It's that you need to heal your leaky gut.
Right, right. And in the meantime, you know, you can reduce the impact of the oxalates while you're healing your gut by certain preparation methods, including boiling, soaking, fermenting, roasting, milling, sprouting, again, to reduce their oxalate content just in that transition to get your gut healthy.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was that Dr. Perlmutter said. Dr. Perlmutter was stating that most healthy people, so I'm going to say, and I think we're both saying this, most healthy guts can manage oxalates. And your world of hair loss, my world of bone loss, unhealthy gut is a major factor behind those two disease states. Or I don't know hair loss does have disease. The other one here is high doses of vitamin C, which is metabolized to oxalate.
Yeah, and let's talk about that too, because most vitamin C supplements, unfortunately, are made from corn and not organic corn. So that's where you can get a vitamin C there's some out there like this one is made from Kamu Amla, you know, some different berries. That's the way to go, you know, powder form. I mean, berries, but I still don't think you're going to have that problem with this type of vitamin C than regular vitamin C supplements that, you know, people don't realize that they're made from. So corn not only is a top inflammatory food, but then if it's not organic, sure, they're not in most supplements, then you have the problem of the pesticides and the glyphosates and all the other toxins. So it's like a double whammy.
Yeah. And it's really no wonder we have all of these issues we have. 95% of the corn supply is GMO. and sprayed with glyphosate. And so exactly, that's another layer to this we're talking. And that's why, Julie, I think it's so important for me to talk about oxalates, because the word oxalate and the demonization of foods is where we're focusing, and it's the wrong place to focus. We're looking in the wrong place. We have to look to the body that's bringing in those oxalates, and is the gut healthy? Are the foods the person's eating the top quality, or are you bringing in not just oxalates that can't be managed by your body, but other things like toxins, GMO food, highly inflammatory food, triggering inflammation? So it's multifactorial. This is not just don't eat spinach, it has oxalates. It's no, heal your gut. If you are using supplements, use good quality supplements. Only bring in food that is clean, non-GMO and non-toxic, that is organic. Drink clean drinking water with a filter. So there's a lot of different aspects before we go to don't eat spinach.
Right, right. And even, and now they're saying that collagen powder can increase oxalates, but so get a good clean collagen powder, because that's good for bone health and hair health.
Okay, that's an interesting one too, because the whole collagen thing's another hot topic in my world, and people ask me all the time about this. I don't actually take collagen myself. I don't recommend it. I know a lot of people do, and I know it's a multi-billion dollar industry. I just don't know enough about it to actually be too to say too much about it. Let me go to the next thing on the list that talked about where we would see an increase in the urine oxalates. This next one is a lack of intestinal bacteria, which can metabolize oxalate. So that means low or insufficient gut microbes that are another protective mechanism that are going to bind with those oxalates so you could poop them out of your body. If you don't have enough of those species, then you're not going to be able to manage the oxalates.
Right. And people don't realize that our gut bacteria, we have a ton of bacteria. I mean, it's a 10-to-1 ratio to cells in our body. We're basically a walking bacteria. But that being said, our bacteria actually competes with each other. So if the bad bacteria can overcrowd the good bacteria and vice versa. So that's why it's so important to start at the beginning and do the detective work like you and I do, Debbie, and do some labs and not just guess. Because if they have dysbiosis, they're going to have most likely going to have a problem with oxalates, you know? Yeah.
Right, exactly, because you have leaky gut, so it's gonna slip in there. You don't have the bacteria that helps to manage it. So the food comes in your mouth. You have a system that knows how to manage it, that either binds it or metabolizes it and does something with it. So either it's already broken down, and even if, and so it's not going into your bloodstream to do damage or going through the kidneys in form of crystals, or it's being packaged. And I like to say that it jumps on the dump truck. You know, our stool is the dump truck that takes whatever out of our body we don't need anymore. So the mechanisms that manage the oxalates that you eat from food, once you digest properly and have whatever needs to go into the system to do what it does, and then have the rest of it go into the dump truck, which is your poop. So if you don't have that proper mechanism, that's where the issues are. It's not don't eat spinach or don't eat raw spinach. It's not that. But on the topic of eating raw spinach, this is what I say to ladies, because I like to think of this in the way that we're designed. If you were to grow your own spinach and harvest your own spinach, could you grow spinach all year round that you could actually take enough out every single day to put a raw handful in your smoothie? And the answer is no. Especially if you live in a cold climate, you wouldn't be growing and harvesting your own spinach. So probably we shouldn't be eating it every single day.
We shouldn't be eating anything every single day.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's the problem, right? We're eating handfuls of spinach. We hear, spinach is good for the bones. So it's a handful of spinach or two handfuls of spinach in your smoothie. So you're bombarding your system. You're overloading your system that either can't handle it because you don't have all of the mechanisms, or you have a lot of dysfunction. You don't have enough of the right microbes. You have leaky gut. You have impaired digestion. So first, Don't eat excessive amounts of things. Second, make sure you have a healthy gut. But it's not that the spinach is bad. So that's my big thing about oxalates. We cannot demonize these foods. They're great foods.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, a simple thing to do is just be wary. I mean, you can walk down an aisle, even in a health food store, with salad dressings, right? And there's only a few, unfortunately, that are made with healthy oils. Only a few made with that olive oil. You want to stay away from the soybean oil, safflower, sunflower, canola oils, and all those other seed oils, because, you know, according to this latest research, they not only are inflammatory, but can increase those oxalates. So that's kind of a hack right there.
Yeah. And these seed oils, unfortunately, we've been exposed to them in massive quantities unbeknownst to us as we purchase food items, maybe not looking at the labels, eating various things that have them in them. And I think there's just been more awareness around the inflammatory aspects of seed oils. And I think that's really come out of the brain research world that's really looking at inflammation and Alzheimer's and dementia. And so we're seeing a lot now about seed oils. So that's one more area. I was more stuff to read because I was preparing for our talk and I was just trying to read. And that's what I would say. I haven't gone that far down the rabbit hole with oxalates yet. I am going to. I actually have another podcast interview set up with a MD that is vegetarian based, and we're going to talk more. I'm looking for more oxalate conversations because I don't think we know enough, or we just don't know. So what I pulled up here is there are scientific studies that explore how the human body manages oxalates. These studies cover various aspects, including how oxalates are absorbed, metabolized, and excreted. So this one here is the absorption of oxalates. Oxalates in food can be absorbed into the bloodstream through the intestines. The amount absorbed can vary based on the type of food and the presence of other compounds that may bind to oxalates, such as calcium. Studies have shown that oxalate absorption is higher from foods with soluble oxalates like spinach compared to those with insoluble oxalates.
Right.
So there's even soluble and insoluble oxalates. And it's also going to matter the digestion, breaking down the foods into the form it needs to come into small intestines to do what needs to happen there. Do you know anything about that, about soluble or insoluble oxalates?
Not too much, but I know that nutrients like biotin, B12, and folate may play roles in detoxifying oxalate to carbon dioxide after it's formed, and B6 is needed for the conversion of glycolate to glycine. So that's a healthy conversion right there.
And you would need your gut to be healthy. You would need to have those nutrients either in food or supplement. And what were they? So B12.
So it's nutrient biotin, well, the B vitamins, B12, and then you want a good methylfolate. And then you need that B6.
Okay. Here, role of gut microbiota. Research has highlighted the role of the gut microbiota in oxalate metabolism. Certain bacteria in the human gut, like the Oxalobacter formigenes, are known to degrade oxalates and may play a role in reducing oxalate absorption. So there's a species that's their role. And you know, you run stool labs, I run stool labs.
Yeah.
We
it's
find all
a marker the, on there. Yeah.
And we find all the time that there's a lot of imbalance, right? There's insufficiencies all over, not enough of the good guys, not enough of the gatekeepers of the gut.
Yeah, and also, I mean, finding out where your nutrient deficiencies lie, because, you know, it's like Dr. Tom O'Brien likes to talk about the weakest link. And, you know, if you have these nutrient deficiencies, then it's going to get you out of balance, and it play a role too in not being able to metabolize the oxalates properly. And then, you know, you can, there are some genetic tests too, to see if you have some mutation in the genes related to oxalate metabolism. I mean, it's not real common, but that's something else people can check for if, you know, if they really want to geek out.
Yeah, it's more areas we're going to look, right? More stones we're going to turn over. So right. This one here, I was just reading about the impact of dietary factors. The absorption and excretion of oxalates can be influenced by dietary factors. For instance, consuming foods high in calcium, along with an oxalate-rich foods, can reduce oxalate absorption because calcium binds to oxalates in the gut, leading to their excretion in the stool rather than absorption. And if you don't have healthy digestion or a healthy gut, then you're going to have impaired, or if you don't have sufficient levels of vitamin D, vitamin D helps calcium get absorbed. Digestion is going to digest the food to extract the minerals out of the food. You're not going to get that mineral to come out of the food. So if you're not going to have the right amount of calcium to manage whatever oxalates are there, then you won't even have enough calcium left for your bones, which is what people worry about. But it's more not about because you ate the oxalates or because you ate the spinach. It's because you either have insufficient vitamin D or you're not digesting. Right. So it's just, there's a lot of factors here. That's what I'm just trying to raise, is the awareness. There's so much information. It's really, really information overload out there. It is. And it's important that when you listen to the person speaking, the studies they're referring to, look at those studies, because what I found, I don't know if you found this too, Julie, I can prove almost anything I want to prove. There's a study for it. It doesn't mean that it's super valid. There's studies that say this and there's studies that say that.
Yeah, I absolutely. And in the hair loss world, it's much worse, because they can take just like an ingredient in their formula and just base their whole product just off of one ingredient that got a good study that they didn't even do, yet they can refer to it clinically. They can definitely skew those studies to their benefit.
Yeah.
And it sounds like in the bone loss world too. You can definitely find a study for everything. And that's why, you know, your clients and my clients, I mean, I like to tell them, hey, you know, just follow our program, because Dr. Google will get you so confused. And even, I mean, there's a lot of good information out there in summits and podcasts, but you know, you can really drive yourself nuts if you try to consume all of it and not follow a certain path.
Yeah. I mean, it drives me nuts. It drives me nuts. And I know quite a bit, and I study quite a bit of things, and then it drives me nuts. When you study this is really going to be the area that I think the focus is going to need to be, because when I see them demonizing foods that are really important for bone health, the other important aspect for me is this. I work with a lot of vegans and vegetarians, and I want to be supportive of that. And there are many people in the health space that won't touch a vegetarian with a 10-foot pole, that truly believe that you have to eat animal protein to be healthy. And I don't know if we truly know the answer to that, if that's the case or not. So that's another area that I would love to learn more about. That's an area that I'd love us to know more about, because we only know what we know. And it's not, does Debbie know this or not? It's, we don't know this as humans, because how can we follow the spinach in your mouth into your stomach to see what it looked like in your small intestines, to see if anything leaked through into your system? There's no studies that are on the spot following the supplement into the body, following the food into the body, because most studies are done where only one thing can be variable and everything else needs to be constant. So some things to study are almost impossible to truly get a handle on. But this thing here, the Washington University, the body's management of oxalates is a complex process influenced by dietary intake, gut health, kidney function, and individual genetic factors. It is all related.
You just nailed it right there.
Well, they just nailed it. Washington University, that was their conclusion of what. But I know that when I started to look at a little bit of these studies, I found that most of them were done on men with kidney disease that did have kidney stone issues. So it was looking at that population.
So how can that be a concise study? I mean, it can't be. How can that's not the general population.
Yeah. And how could you study 100 women and give them a certain amount of spinach to eat, or whatever it is, high doses of any of these things we're demonizing, how would you test for kidney stones? And what time frame would it be that kidney stones are made if their body is ever going to make kidney stones?
Right.
So we have to actually question what it is we think we know or what we're studying. And I think that is what, that's what I just want to raise curiosity for people. I want to raise curiosity, but I also want you and I to share how important the gut is to all of this, because a healthy gut will manage most of this. I asked another physician, I on Instagram, I asked someone, she's actually been interviewed on two of my podcasts before. She's a gynecologist and herbalist. And I DM'd her on Instagram. I said, what do you know about oxalates? There's a lot of confusion. And her response to me was, not a problem for most people.
Yeah, yeah. And let me just geek out a little bit, because oxalate is a byproduct of the metabolism of three main molecules: ascorbate, glycolate, probably not pronouncing that right, glycolate, which comes from the breakdown of several different amino acids, and glycine. So again, like I said earlier, most urinary oxalate comes endogen, you know, rather than dietary oxalates. Again, it just points out their benefits too, because it could be used as a possible chelator of binding out toxins. Just goes back to like this whole conversation. You can't exclude these foods forever thinking that's going to be the solution, because it's not. They're healthy foods. You need to get your gut healthy.
Yeah. And you just pointed out something, you just made me think of something. When you do an oat test, an organic acid test, there is an oxalate marker on there.
Mm-hmm.
Yet an elevation doesn't always mean that it came from the diet. So for example, if the body is managing fungus or mold, these species inside your body,
oh, absolutely,
they'll elevate it, right? Yeah. So that's even, we didn't even think of that, but there's also the mold yeast aspect, mm-hmm. that if you have that imbalance, and I'm not sure what you see in your population, I see a lot of yeast issues.
Candida, yeah, mm-hmm. it's going to elevate that oxalate marker in that lab.
Yeah,
I mean, this is such a good conversation to have, because, you know, a lot of our women, I think they do a lot the same as your clients. They get a hold of some of this research they find somewhere on oxalates and just stop eating them. And it's just not the solution. You have to get your gut healthy. And,
right.
You know, in the meantime, like I said, in the transition, prepare those high oxalate foods the way I explained earlier. And even, you know, taking something like this calcium mag citrate in the transition.
Right. So then you're bringing in some of those binding factors that may right. not be in the diet, that may not be available because of a unhealthy gut. So you can't actually break down the food that would release these binding helpers. Let's right. you know, put it in kindergarten terms.
Yeah.
Your body has helpers or gatekeepers inside your gut.
Right.
And some of them come from foods you eat. Some of them are in your gut, like when we talk about the bacteria. And if you have insufficient helpers, and then you're eating a lot of spinach, and I'm only using the word spinach because that's the one that comes up quite often. Now they're moving mm-hmm. it onto sweet potatoes yeah. and almonds and chia seeds, but let's just use the spinach, the S word, because that's what I hear so much. You have to have a lot of factors, a lot of these helpers in your body to help manage
right.
what you're eating.
Right. I mean, and spinach is a great antioxidant. So yeah.
Well, spinach is a lot of things, and spinach has a lot of good qualities. And I think that when some of the studies that I've looked at, it says that the benefits of spinach outweigh these negative aspects. And maybe that's something to focus on too, that when we do studies, we have a bias. We're trying to prove something. And mm-hmm. so we want to show that, wow, this is a high oxalate food. And if you have issues with kidney stones, don't eat it. We want to show that. So we're going to look for, does it have the oxalates? And the answer is yes. But the other side of that is, yes, it has high oxalates, yet the benefits of everything else it has outweighs that negative benefit of the high oxalates. So it's the balance of the good properties of a food versus the negative properties. And I would say that that's probably the base for me when it comes to the oxalate conversation and the foods that are being demonized. What are the benefits of the almonds, the chia seeds, the spinach, and other high, the rhubarb and all these other high oxalate foods? What are the benefits of those foods versus this O word that we're all using right now?
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I mean, if they're eating those foods every day, I mean, even if they aren't high oxalate foods, you can't, it's not healthy to be eating the same foods day in and day out. For one, you'll probably become sensitive to them, but you need an array of nutrients and micronutrients, macronutrients, and for to be healthy and to have a healthy microbiome. So, maybe that's the silver lining here is, you know, if you are eating almonds every day, or, you know, having almond milk every day in your coffee or something, then you need to rethink that. So, you know, maybe looking at this as the, you know, what the silver lining is, but also figuring out it's not just these foods that people are demonizing. It's taking it one step further and looking at why am I having problems with this food? Well, it's because your gut's out of balance.
Yes. A healthy person can manage these things
in
healthy quantities. Then the benefits of the food would outweigh the risks. There is something here I was reading about the genetic tendency, and it looks like there's two genes, mutations in genes, the AGT gene and the PH2, which has to do with the GRHPR gene. In these cases, there's a lack of an enzyme that metabolizes the oxalates in a way that your body can manage them. So there are a couple of cases where you're going to have people that have a genetic mutation. That's not most people. And so, you know, just trying to make this be more about really understand what's being said and what's being shared and what we know. What do we really, really know? Right. Because that's what it always comes down. And even in the cases of the genes, I was reading the protocol for that, and it says to bring down the oxalate intake, reduce your oxalate intake until you can decrease the burden on the body, because you can. Once it's all about finding balance. Right. And there are ways, even with people with the genetic mutation, to release any oxalates that have been embedded in the tissues, release them from the body, bringing in some binding aspects, whether that's through minerals or foods or some of those healing modalities that we share as, you know, you and nutritionist, me, a health coach, of supporting detoxification and supporting the body to manage what it needs to manage. And it says here, for some people, it could be a couple of months to a couple of years. But again, that's for people with a mutation genetically. That's not for most people.
Yeah. And also, I mean, there's so many different lists of oxalate foods out there. That's confusing in and of itself. I mean, if you Google high oxalate foods, you'll get like 10 different lists.
So how do we test for oxalates in food? That would be an interesting question. What does that look like? The study, how are they testing for oxalates?
Yeah, I don't know. There's definitely lists that show which ones are higher than others. They're all across the board. I mean,
yeah, rhubarb. I was kind of that really made me sad to see that, because rhubarb, my parents are Scottish and my grandfather used to grow rhubarb and I would eat rhubarb. And I think often that any kind of food that's very sour or bitter is very good for digestion. It helps to stimulate digestive juices. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wondering about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm just reading more here about vegan diets. And it said they investigated the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, which, is that a good one? I mean, you're a nutritionist. Is that like American Journal of Clinical Nutrition? Sounds great.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Investigated the impact of oxalate-rich foods in vegan diets, noting that although these diets are higher in oxalates, proper meal planning can mitigate negative impacts on calcium absorption. What? That's the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And they say that vegan diets, they investigated the impact of oxalate-rich foods in vegan diets, noting that although these diets are higher in oxalates, proper meal planning can mitigate negative impacts on calcium absorption. That's amazing, because that they're saying there, if you have that balance of what you're eating, and then you and I would add on, and you need to have a healthy gut and healthy digestion.
Yeah. So, you know, dietetics is different than what I am as a functional nutritionist. And so I think that that was probably written by, you know, like a dietitian. So functional nutrition gets to the root cause and does functional labs. So yeah, I don't know how else that study reads that you just pointed out.
Well, it sounded good because it talked about how you could do proper meal planning and mitigate the negative impacts. Here's another one, oxalates in tea and calcium excretion. Now, this is another thing people have telling me lately. I'm not drinking tea anymore. And it's like, well, wait a minute. There's so many great antioxidant benefits of tea. So this is from the Journal of Nutrition. Explored how oxalates in tea affect calcium excretion. The study concluded that regular tea consumption could slightly increase calcium excretion, slightly increase it, but the impact was not significant enough to discourage tea consumption. So did it find a small amount? Yes. And, you know, some people might run with that and say, oh, look, it increases it, but it's not a significant amount. What about the journal Food Chemistry? Have you ever heard of that one? It's a journal. They investigated how different cooking methods, and you were mentioning this earlier, affect the oxalate content of foods. This study found that boiling reduces oxalate levels more effectively than other cooking methods, potentially improving calcium absorption.
Yeah.
And then the next one was urological research. And that was for people with kidney stones that said that they should be careful. And I would also agree with that people with kidney stones need to be careful. But then you and I, from our functional mind, would go to, whoa, why do they have kidney issues? Let's look at root causes of that. And if it's not genetic, let's look at lifestyle aspects of why are their kidneys not optimally functioning.
Right. And also if they have a bile deficiency, I mean, a lot of people have had their gallbladders removed. They're going to have a hard time with fat absorption, and that makes oxalates in any foods just higher, as we spoke about before, but we didn't talk about the bile salt deficiency. And because then these fatty acids will bind the calcium and reduce calcium availability from binding those oxalates. So, you know, signs of fat malabsorption are, you know, diarrhea, foul smelling gas, bloating, increased amount of fat in the stool. Yeah.
Floating stool. If you have lighter colored stool, right, like light brown, then that could be some liver issues.
Yeah.
So those are some things to look for when it comes to that. Yeah. So the gut plays a really important role, I guess. And I'm going to do more research in this area, more studies, not to have women be so confused in the way that they are when it comes to our diet and what should we eat and what shouldn't we eat. And so many of the foods that we're told to eat, because they're higher in the, you know, the four musketeers of bone health: vitamin D, calcium, magnesium, and vitamin K. So a lot of those foods are foods that have high oxalates. So
yeah, now, even like beets are high in oxalates, and carrots. I mean, chives. And it's, yeah, it's so many healthy foods. It's ridiculous. Parsley. Yeah. Rhubarb, like we talked about, spinach. Yeah. It's Swiss chard. Oh, I love Swiss chard. You know, you finally get someone to try Swiss chard and then they get scared because it's high in oxalates. I mean, it's not a healthy mentality.
The more I study this, the more I learn. So as a yoga therapist, Ayurveda is a sister science to yoga. Yoga is for the body and for the mind. It's mostly for the mind, and it's also for the body. The It's really more about the mind. It's the physical practice, but the body aspect of the yoga science, the sister science, is Ayurveda. And what Ayurveda states is that you have to have a very strong digestive capacity. And I'm sure in your work, and I know in my work in the gut space, supporting digestion is so important for everyone. And you mentioned people without a gallbladder not secreting bile. Another thing that gets involved with bile secretion, by the way, is gluten. So there's yet another don't eat gluten marker there, but supporting digestion is important. And so The thing with Ayurveda focuses on digestion. The other thing is it talks about eating seasonally and eating a variety of foods. So you wouldn't be eating almonds every day and spinach every day and all these things every day anyway, Because they wouldn't be in season. You wouldn't be growing all of that and harvesting all that. So really looking at what's at the farmer's market, what's in season. I think some of the easiest ways, someone told me one time, just tell me what to eat. And I think you do that, Julie. That's part of what you do as a nutritionist. I don't give them anything specific in that sense because I'm not a licensed nutritionist. But what I do say is, here's some generalizations. Some of the easiest things to think about are stir fries for dinner or bowls for dinner, where you either do a whole bunch of roasted vegetables or things like chickpeas. So easy. And then just throw it all together and put a little bit of a homemade creamy sauce with tahini or avocados and make a little sauce or do a stir fry with coconut aminos and a healthy fat. So you can get really good prebiotics in there. You could do Jerusalem artichokes. You could do your dark leafies. You could bring in some of the inulin, the onions and garlic, all those good gut foods. So that's what I'd say for dinner. And then for lunch or soup, salad. These are all things that if you think stir fry, bowls, soups, and salads, those four categories right there, you could really make a lot of great breakfast and lunch items. And then, like you said, you're cooking them. So you're going to, you know, reduce some of those aspects of the oxalates.
Yeah. And please, when you cook, just cook extra. So you have meals for, you freeze them or have them for lunch. Then I call it lunchify. And that's one of the biggest problems in our society today is people have stopped cooking. They think they can just order food out and go pick up food. And you're going to get those seed oils, I guarantee it, because they're cheaper to prepare food with. And, you know, these restaurants. That's a whole nother conversation, Debbie.
It is. But what it all boils down to and what you're getting to, we have to cook for ourselves. We have to. It doesn't matter if you don't want to or you don't like to. If you don't like having a disease, if you don't like losing your hair, if you don't like having a slow performing thyroid and low blood pressure and cholesterol issues, if you don't like having those things, which most people don't want those diseases or imbalances or deficiencies, then you need to see food as medicine and learn to cook. And it's not so challenging, really. There's a lot of easy, quick things you can make. You can lunchify.
No. And let me tell you a quick story is my grandmother lived 104. Did we talk about this before?
I remember you mentioning about your grandmother living to 104, but I can't remember and some people might not be listening to you.
She loved to cook. She cooked fresh vegetables. She ate game meat, wild game. She loved to cook. And her daughter, my mother, got stage 3 breast cancer. Okay. She didn't like to cook. She had the stress. Right there is a perfect story to just prove the point. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's imperative that we cook and not easy. Not easy.
Michael Pollan wrote this book on he wrote it Cooked. And, Michael Pollan.
What's it called?
It's Cooked.
There it is. Michael Pollan Cooked. Okay. So Michael Pollan again.
He's been big in this space for a long time. And this book is basically what I was just saying is, everything from the story comparing my mother was not adopted. They had the same genes, but my grandmother cooked. And the only reason she died, she stopped eating. She was on no medications. Okay, no medications. But there's so much power in cooking. I mean, you look at these blue zones. They're not ordering out.
Yeah, How to Live to 100, I think it is on Netflix. It's a really great series, and they look at some commonality in the people. And you're right, nobody is doing DoorDash in these places. Everyone is
I'm
cooking their
concerned
own
about
food.
our young kids who don't know how to cook and don't want to cook and
Yeah.
get away with it. They're getting away with it.
Well, are they really?
Well, yeah, not
They're not
healthy.
getting away with it because they might have disease states earlier than our generation had. And I
Well,
think
yeah,
for
I mean, I'm saying like no one's setting them down and saying, let's
oh
teach them
yeah.
how to cook.
You just mean it's happening. Well, and the other thing is, I think that from our generation too, we have our own things that we were dealing with, right? We had exposure to toxins in a way that we didn't understand that we had. So our body's been managing for years a lot of exposure to toxins. We had the fat-free craze where we didn't eat fat, and fat is so vital for health. Every single cell has a phospholipid membrane, which is fat-based. So there's a lot of aspects as to why we may be in the imbalance that we're in now. And so it's not about the food that you're eating that has something in it. It's the person eating it, and can they manage some of these anti-nutrients that exist in plants? And will your body be able to manage it? Will your gut be able to manage it? So I think that that's a great place for us to end, because hopefully we shared information, shared stuff that is known, raised the questioning mind to what we don't know, getting people to really look into some of these aspects. And I hope that we conveyed the importance of a healthy gut to manage oxalates. Yeah, any last words, Julie?
No, I mean, like you said, people can Google and they can find, well, they can find even the oxalates a poison. But the whole point of this conversation is there's a good side to oxalates and there's a way to manage them, and it's not avoiding them.
Right.
It's getting your gut healthy, so.
Get your gut healthy, but also everything in moderation. And
Right.
should you really eat a cup of spinach every single day? Does that sound
No, you
normal?
shouldn't eat
No.
a handful of almonds every day either.
Or a chia seed pudding every day, or anything that is, we have to find balance. All right, Julie, thank you so much.
Thank
This was a
you.
great conversation. It was wonderful to have you on again.
Oh, thank you. It was nice being here.
All right, thanks. Thank you so much for listening to Stronger Bones Lifestyle Podcast. Bone loss is not an inevitable part of aging. We don't have to just wait for it to happen. There is so much that you can do. And that is what you will learn each week on the show. Go to my website, debbierobinson.com, if you want more information about what was shared in today's episode. At the bottom of this episode in the show notes, there will be links to whatever was shared. Please subscribe to this podcast. Share this podcast with your friends, your family, or any women that you think may be interested or benefit from the information we're sharing. Please rate the podcast. And if you have any questions you'd like asked or answered, I would love to hear from you. Let's do this, ladies. Let's change the way the world views osteoporosis and slow down, stop, or reverse our bone loss, take charge, and show other ladies what is possible. Thank you so much for joining me.